And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is various input. Each of my guests is providing us with different input than we normally expect. My next guest examines the ultimate mystery of inheritance. We'll look at this new emerging science of how stress in the environment can impact an individual's physiology and impact genes for several generations from his latest book, Epigenetics. And as always, if you want to join in the conversation or ask a question, you can call us at 639-0008. And you want to keep that number handy because we've still got those two Dodger tickets and a parking pass for this Saturday night's game against the Arizona Diamondbacks. We'll be giving that away a little bit later in the show. My next guest, Richard Francis, is a freelance science writer. He received his Ph.D. in neurobiology and behavior from Stony Brook University and was the recipient of the National Research Science Award from the National Institute for Mental Health. Before becoming a freelance writer, he conducted widely published postdoctoral research in evolutionary neurobiology and sexual development at the University of California, Berkeley and Stanford University. Joining us from New York, how are you doing today, Richard?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I'm doing terrific. Thank you so much for being my special guest. And I love to have thought leaders on the show, but you are truly out there on the leading edge of thought with this new field of epigenetics. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, am I?
Yes.
Okay, good. Well, now, let's start at the beginning, because this is so new. I barely knew about it until I got your book. But epigenetics is defined as the science of genetic expression, and it may effectively help us with our health care by cutting costs, by eliminating and identifying genetic defects. So kind of give us, Richard, give us a working definition of what epigenetics is, please.
Sure. It might help if I just contrast it with genetics.
Okay, good.
So, you know, the study of genetics is a study of changes in the gene sequence, the so-called genetic code.
Mm-hmm.
Well, epigenetics are chemicals that don't, don't change that sequence, but they alter the gene's behavior, how active it will be.
Okay, so they don't change the sequence, but they alter the behavior. Now,
right.
Give us an example. I know you're trying to catch your breath there. Give us an example of how you can how that would happen. What does that do? We don't want to mutate, but it does change the chemistry around it, right?
Yes. Yeah, so for example, there's a lot of events that occur in the womb that affect our stress response or obesity and things like that, which are caused by these chemicals that attach to the gene. They don't change the gene sequence, but they permanently alter its activity level.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about an example, because you have so many examples in the book. But the one I want to refer to goes all the way back to World War II, and it goes back to the Nazi, basically starvation of the Dutch people during World War II, trying to get them to acquiesce a little bit. Talk to me about how the impact of the starvation during World War II on parents had an impact on children generations beyond that.
Sure. A lot of effects of the starvation for those who experienced it in the womb, and one of the kind of counterintuitive effects was on obesity. That is, the children that were starved in the womb, in essence, actually tended to become obese adults.
Now, why do you say that's counterintuitive? Because to me, that makes sense. If you were denied something in the womb as you're developing, your natural instinct would be, well, I'm never going to let that happen again. I'm going to eat as much as I possibly can, and so therefore you would tend towards obesity.
Well, your intuitions are quite correct. it was counterintuitive to me, I should say.
Okay.
There is this compensatory response to the starvation, whereby the fetus develops actually a more efficient metabolism. And that efficient metabolism is very adaptive if it is born into an environment of deprivation. But if it's born into an environment of plenty, which is what happened after World War II, after the famine, then they're too efficient in dealing with the calories, and they tend to be more obese.
An interesting study, one of many that are in there. Now, epigenetics, they're saying that it really holds the keys to solving a multitude of problems that we're facing here. Some of the problems that they throw out, things like Alzheimer, autism, cancer, diabetes, schizophrenia. How is the study of epigenetics going to help us in each of these areas? Not individually, but in general, how is it going to help us resolve some of these debilitating diseases?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. These findings about Alzheimer's and lupus and so on were done on twins, identical twins. They found that one twin would develop a early onset Alzheimer's, say, while its other, where it's, you know, essentially a genetic clone, did not have the problem. So then they say, well, you know, how can this be? And it turns out that there's epigenetic changes occurring in one twin that don't occur in the other. And by identifying these epigenetic changes in the affected twin, that opens the way to a therapy to reverse the process.
Hmm, interesting.
And that's the good news from epigenetics is that, unlike mutations, epigenetic processes are reversible.
Ah, that is important, and that is an important distinction to be made. My guest is Richard Francis. He's author of the book, Epigenetics, The Ultimate Mystery of Inheritance. And Richard, we're talking about solving some of these diseases because epigenetics is reversible. Your book is filled with so many interesting stories. Another interesting study that I found just fascinating was one in which men who started smoking as teenagers had an impact on their future son's health. Talk to me about that, and how does that play into epigenetics?
Well, you know, I have to say, that was my editor put that in the promotional material without my input, and I was not happy about it, because there's nothing in the book about that.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately. But there are analogous, certainly, processes in humans. Say, one of the interesting inherited effects occurred in a study on these people in Sweden, this kind of a remote population where they had this incredibly detailed information on the crops for each year, and so they can kind of calculate how many calories they had in a given year. And what they found was that for males, when they were exposed to less than normal amount of calories in their pre-teenage years, which is called the slow growth period, their sons tended to live longer than those who had more calories.
Hmm.
And then not only their sons, but their grandson. This it went over three generations.
Wow. And so they had the data to be able to do that. What conclusion do you draw from that, Richard?
Well, that it was interesting because there's all this studies on, you know, how longevity relates to calorie restriction. And this is what these people are going to look at now. So that, you know, when you don't starve a mouse but restrict its calories, they tend to live longer than mice that are kind of fed ad lib. And there's some thought that this might be a general process in mammals.
Hmm. Interesting. Now, my guest is Richard Francis. We're talking about epigenetics. Richard, can the epigenetic process occur randomly? And if so, you've talked about the process being reversed. How do you identify that it's happening so that you can reverse the process?
Yes. There is a significant random component, as you suggest. The environment is a huge factor, but there is a random component. And there's a particular kind of epigenetic process. It's called methylation. And it's relatively easy now, with the technology that exists, to determine how much a particular sequence of DNA is methylated. And that's the cue to how much that's been epigenetically modified. Now, a lot of methylation means the gene will be inactive. Very little or no methylation means it will be more active. And so what they've done now for each kind of cell, they're trying to get a baseline for what's the normal level of methylation. And then they can determine, you know, the effects of too much or too little. And methylation is one of those epigenetic processes that it can be reversed in a variety of ways, including through certain kinds of chemical cocktails.
chemical cocktails, as you call them. I like that. My guest is Richard Francis. Richard, all of this research, all of this knowledge that we've accumulated over the last 15 years has really been possible because of the Human Genome Project, which I guess it goes back to 1983 now. But it opens up the Pandora's box of ethical and philosophical issues around the use of genetics and now epigenetics on a more practical level. So if you examine this, talk to me about some of the ethical and also the practical issues that might be involved with things like insurance discrimination or employment discrimination or even on a much bigger basis, mating discrimination. You know, you can run a background check on a potential spouse today. Why wouldn't you run an epigenetic test just to see how they're going to fare over the next century or the next generation or two?
Right. Well, you know, that's a much more significant ethical problem for genetics precisely because they're not reversible. Now, if you say, you know, if an insurance person is looking at somebody with a particular epigenetic configuration that is, say, abnormal, there should be no reason in principle why that would affect the decision, given that, you know, within a few years' time, there'll be technologies available that should be able to reverse a lot of that.
Okay. And who are developing these technologies? I mean, right now, this is all very, very scientific, and we're truly talking about the leading-edge stuff with my guest, Richard Francis. But, Richard, are there companies that are looking to monetize this today that are going to take the lead in not only testing but also reversing some of these epigenetic deficiencies that we see?
Right. Yeah, most of this research heretofore has been done in university and by the NIH and organizations like that. But the biotech companies have now gotten very interested in epigenetics as a way to make some profits. One of the biggest breakthroughs lately epigenetically is with respect to cancer. So that I just saw that a couple months ago the FDA approved four new cancer drugs that are epigenetic therapies, which is unprecedented.
That's a large number of drugs at any one particular time to treat cancer.
Right.
Did you know just by any twist of fate that you were broadcasting into Ventura County, which is the home of Amgen?
Now that you mention that, I certainly realize that. But right, they're a big player.
Yeah. Without a doubt, they are a big player. So my question to you is this: bring it on down to the local level. Was any one of those four FDA approvals for Amgen? And if so, what might that mean in terms of hiring new scientists and creating new solutions to reverse some of the epigenetic damage?
Yes, I don't know if any of those drugs came from Amgen. I wouldn't be surprised if they did, but I didn't look at that. It would be a brand new area of employment, certainly in companies like Amgen. And I used to live in the Bay Area, and there's a lot of biotech there.
There sure is.
Which is starting to get into the epigenetic dimension as well.
That's true. My guest is Richard Francis, author of the book Epigenetics, The Ultimate Mystery of Inheritance. And Richard, I want to come back to this political and philosophical issues surrounding this and ask you to weigh in on this, because you're a science writer. You're supposed to be a little bit more objective above the fray on all of this. So how does one weigh the cost savings and the efficiency benefits that you get from epigenetics versus the privacy concerns that many of us have about our health records, and just, you know, putting our genes out there on the internet?
Yeah, sure. It is always a problem with any kind of medical technology, given that in order to understand it, there are ways then to document it in which insurance companies, employers could possibly use. And I have a lot of concern about the way this information is used, not just epigenetic information, but certainly the genomic information. It's something, you know, it's something that's beyond scientists to decide. This is something as a society that, you know, informed on a scientific level, but not scientists themselves have to oversee.
And I think that's where your book comes into play, Richard, because your book is leading us down that path of information, and it's giving us the framework to make these decisions. So I'm going to push you just a little bit harder on this. Yes, it is not for scientists to decide, but I'm going to ask you personally, Richard Francis, how do you strike that balance between the cost efficiencies and effectiveness of epigenetic research versus the whole privacy issue?
Well, yeah, what I would first make a distinction is with respect to, you know, how significant the conditions we're talking about. Now, in terms of, say, cancer, it's clear that, you know, epigenetics can go a long way toward, in the future, possibly as both a prophylactic and as a therapy in cancer. Now, how... there's no reason why that information should go beyond the doctor's office.
Well, you would think that in theory, wouldn't you? But then again, whenever it's out there, you know, there are going to be insurance companies who are going to be massively regulating the amount of medical treatment that we can get under the new proposed healthcare plan. And certainly outside of the United States, government is more deeply involved in healthcare than it is here in the United States. Mm-hmm. So this will affect other countries such as Canada, our neighbor to the north, or Great Britain, or some of the European countries as well. So these are all issues that we are definitely going to have to wrestle with in the future. My guest is Richard Francis, author of the book Epigenetics, The Ultimate Mystery of Inheritance. Richard, as I said, your book really does lay the groundwork for understanding this, but what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, Epigenetics?
Well, the main point is the one I mentioned earlier, that epigenetic processes are reversible, and that's the good news. And, you know, especially when we think of cancer, it's always been thought of as a genetic disease first and last. Well, it turns out it's not just a genetic disease, it's an epigenetic disease. And often by reversing the epigenetic processes, you can cure the cancer, even given the mutations that exist. So that's a huge part of the message. A second is that our environment, the food we eat, the chemicals to which we are exposed, even our social environment affects our genes epigenetically.
And the social environment is something that we didn't get a chance to touch on. We'll have to have you back to talk about that, Richard, in the future. Thank you so much for being my guest. Now, if people are interested by what you have to say, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, my publisher is very upset with me because I don't have a website. I'm in the process of setting one up. Hopefully within the next month I will have something.
All right, well, that's good. In the meantime, you can send them to Amazon, or if you're interested in the book, you can even go to our own Bank of Books here in Ventura, two locations to serve you, 748 East Main Street and 2682 East Main Street, both in Ventura. Richard, thank you so much for being my guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Hey, it was a pleasure.
It was a joy. Thanks so much.